All right, so we're in Genesis chapter 31, and we got up to verse 24 last time. So, again, just a little bit of review. Jacob was had been working for Laban for 14 years for his two wives, and we've talked about that at length already. And then he wants to go back home. Laban says, "You don't have to go yet, do you? I mean, how about you stay on a little bit longer and I'll pay you something more?" So they agree that Jacob will serve for cattle, and they make an agreement that anything that's born ring-streaked, spocked, or spotted or speckled, that would belong to Jacob. And we saw right from the beginning of that deal that Laban tries to cheat him and not give him what he promised. And then we saw Jacob's testimony was Laban tried to change his wages 10 different times. He was very dishonest in his dealing. And eventually the time came that God said, "Now's the time to leave. Now's the time to go back to your family, and you're going to leave Laban behind." And so Jacob decided to flee from the presence of Laban and not tell him that he was leaving. And Laban didn't find out about this until 3 days later. And then he decided to pursue Jacob. And that's basically where we left off last time. It says in verse 23, he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. And they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And the last thing we saw is verse 24, that God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, "Take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad." And we talked a little bit about what that meant, but now we're going to continue on in verse 25, and we're going to see that Laban actually tries to, maybe he doesn't understand what God's saying. Maybe he tries to twist it a little bit, but he's going to make it seem like God is saying something else. But anyway, we got 30 verses to get through. It's kind of a longer passage, but I don't really think I'm going to stop and get too deep on any one thing in here. So let's just start reading in verse 25. And it says, "Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, 'What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me? And didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, Take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods?'" So you see, Laban catches up to Jacob in Gilead, and he starts accusing him of all this this wrong that he had done. "You've done very foolishly." And he also said, let's look at verses 27 to 29. There's some really interesting things in here. So he says, "Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth, with song, with tabret, and with harp?" Laban's saying, "Hey, you know, if you were going to leave, I wanted to throw you a party. We were going to have a celebration, you know. I'm going to send you away with mirth. I'm going to show you how much I love you." So he says that. And then, verse 29, It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. Whoa. What are you talking about? Like, 1 minute you're saying, hey, you know, I wanted to send you away with mirth and gladness, and now it's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. What is he saying? He's not just saying he has the ability to hurt Jacob. He's saying he has the right to hurt Jacob, that he would be justified in hurting Jacob. Why? Because he's accusing Jacob of doing wrong. He's not just saying, well, I've got all my brothers here and I'm stronger than you and therefore I can hurt you. He's saying, no, you did something wrong to me and I have the right to hurt you. I'd be justified in hurting you. Actually, as I was reading this, what actually came to mind was Judges chapter 19. So we can turn there. Just such a contrast between these two passages. And by the way, just one thing about this chapter, Genesis chapter 31, especially the verses that we're looking at today, who I see it's really focusing on isn't even so much Jacob. And it's not even really God. This passage is mostly about Laban. It's mostly showing you his character, what he's really like. But anyway, Judges chapter 19 and verses 1 to 3. It came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. And his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. Okay, so he took this concubine, that would be a wife, and his wife played the whore against him. She did something to him that was really bad, and then what she did was she fled away from his presence and went back to her father's house. So what's his response? Verse 3. And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her and to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of asses. And she brought him into her father's house. And when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. Whoa, what's my point? Why did I go here? I want you to see this man actually cared for this woman. And he didn't say, well, she did something bad to me and then she ran away. I'm going to go after her and hurt her. He went after her to speak friendly to her and to bring her home again. Okay. Laban says, oh, I would have sent you out with mirth. It's in the power of my hand to do you hurt now. He wasn't really planning to send Jacob off with mirth. And if he did, if he was kind of constrained to do that because of the culture or the atmosphere there with his family, it probably would have been like this. Jacob, I really love you. Like, it would have been a fake smile. It would have been, everything would have been so fake because he hated Jacob at this point. He hated Jacob. His countenance wasn't like it was before. Laban tried with all his power to cheat Jacob out of everything that he had. But guess what? The blessing of Abraham was on him. Right. God told him. God said to Abraham, whoever curses you is going to be cursed. Whoever blesses you is going to be blessed. And that blessing passed down, and Isaac blessed Jacob the same way when he sent him out. He said, the blessing of Abraham be upon thee. God give you the blessing of Abraham. Whoever curses you, he's going to be cursed. Whoever blesses you, he's going to be blessed. Now Laban thought to curse Jacob by using him to get a blessing, by using him to profit by him. And God saw that and says, no, I'm not going to let that happen. My blessing is upon him. You try and curse Jacob, you're going to get cursed. You try and take what he has, well, guess what? I'm going to turn it around and he's going to take what you have. I'm going to give it to him because my blessing is on him. And that's what happened. So, there's some other kind of interesting things I see in these verses. So overall, what Laban is saying is, in verse 29, he also says, "But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, Take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad." So basically he's saying, I have the right, I would be justified in hurting you because of the wrong that you did to me, but God spoke to me. And God said, take heed you speak not to Jacob either good or bad. What is he saying? He's saying, I have the right to hurt you, but God's going to spare you. He's going to spare you my wrath, which you deserve. So that's kind of Laban's point of view. But one other thing that I thought was very interesting about verse 29, the King James Bible is very particular about the pronouns that it uses. And all the way through this passage, Laban is speaking to Jacob, and it's thou, 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 thee, thee, thee. What hast thou done? Thou hast stolen away unawares to me. He's accusing Jacob personally. This is what you did to me, Jacob. You, thou. You as an individual, you did this. Verse 28, and hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. Thou, Jacob. Verse 29, it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. Whoa, the pronoun changed. And he's not speaking specifically to Jacob anymore. He's speaking about his whole group. His whole family. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. I want to hurt all of you. That's what just slipped out of his mouth. What else slips out of his mouth? But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight. He doesn't say the God of thy father. Interesting. Because in the next verse, verse 30, he says, now though thou wouldest needs be gone because thou sore longest after thy father's house. He can say thy father, talking about Jacob. But in verse 29, he says, the God of your father. What does that mean? Food for thought. I see a couple of possibilities. One, again, he says you. It's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. Your whole family there, but the God of your father. It seems like he's associating his whole family now with Jacob's father. And he's saying he's now the father of you all, which is kind of interesting. He's kind of making a separation. This is you all, and he's going to say something different later in this chapter. But it seems like right now he's saying, you all, you're separate from me. And by the way, the God of your father, like he's making Isaac the father of that whole family now. And he's also saying it's the God of your father. He's not my God. He's not my God. He's the God of your father. So then we come to verse 30. He says, and now though thou wouldest needs be gone because thou sore longest after thy father's house. I mean, you want to leave. You want to go back to your family. I get it. Yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? So now, again, he's going back to thou and he's saying, Jacob, I know you did it. You, Jacob, you stole my gods. Now here's the thing. Jacob didn't. Jacob was innocent in this thing. He had no idea that Rachel had stolen them. But Rachel had stolen them. Okay? So this is kind of... Let's go back to the book of Judges. Let's go to Judges chapter 6. I know we talked a little bit about this last time. But I think, you know what? I think last time they were only called images so far. Now he actually calls them gods. Judges chapter 6. And verse 30. So this is where God appears to Gideon and tells him to throw down the altar of Baal. And he does it. And then in verse 30 it says, "Then the men of the city said unto Joash," that's his father, "Bring out thy son that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, Will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar." That is a pretty shameful thing. If you come to somebody else and you say, "Hey, you stole my gods. Your gods? They could just be stolen?" That's actually kind of funny. Your gods. Like there's a real God who's so powerful that he created the earth and the heavens and everything that's in them. He's got real power. These gods are so weak that they can be stolen by a thief. Somebody could just carry them off and they can't even help themselves. You know, they're so weak, they're so impotent. And, you know, I mean, if somebody comes to you and says that, like, what do you say if you're Jacob? Like, are you sure they didn't just walk off and do something on her? And Laban's like, "How could they do that? They're just images." It's kind of pathetic. They're supposed to be gods, and that they're just completely helpless. They can't even help themselves. But anyway, Laban sees that they're missing, just assumes Jacob must have stolen them, because they're gone. So what's Jacob's response to all this? So verse 31, Jacob explains why he fled. Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me." So what's his reasoning? He says, "You know what? I know what kind of guy you are, Laban. You've been cheating me. You've been trying to steal from me all this time. And yeah, that's what I expected. If I told you that I was leaving, I figured you'd try and take your daughters back by force from me." And obviously, they're given to Jacob to be his wives. They belong to Jacob now, not to Laban.
Right.
I mean, he served for them. That's... any way you look at it, they belong to Jacob. But also you can see, he says, "Because I was afraid." I was afraid. Jacob still has some fear of man that God has to deal with. Now Jacob is moving in that direction. He's learning who God is. He's learning that he can trust in God. But he still has the fear of man at this point. He doesn't mention anything about fearing God at this point. And there's a lot of people that, you know, they start to, you know, they're maybe on the right track. They start to learn a little bit about God and, you know, learn some things about him and learn that he's real. But they're not really yet at the point where they fear him. And that's really important. And Jacob is moving in that direction, but he's not quite there yet. But anyway, I'll talk about more about that as we get into some of these other verses. So verse 32, he knows he didn't steal these gods, And he doesn't believe that anybody else that's with him would have stolen them. Verse 32, with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. So Rachel stole them. Why did she steal them? Well, I don't really know. Maybe she still had some idolatry in her heart. We kind of compared the two sisters in chapter 30, and I think it was pretty obvious that out of the two, Leah was the more spiritual of the two. Rachel, it took her a while to really acknowledge God and start calling out to God for herself. But one thing that you'll see in this culture is a lot of times people, you know, they'll like give lip service to God, or they'll try and follow God, but they're still holding on to other things. Right. You ever been like that in your own life? Where you're a Christian, you come to church, but you know what? You still got some other gods hanging around. And sometimes it even takes you a while to realize that that's the case. It certainly happened in my life. But anyway, Rachel had taken them. And so Jacob invites Laban to come and search for him. And he says, if you find him with someone, you know, whoever has him, let him be put to death. So verse 33, and Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. So she says to her father, it's that time of the month. I'm inconvenienced right now. I don't want to have to rise up. And he buys it, apparently. boy, she is certainly his daughter. she's obviously not being honest. Of course, she heard the decree. She does not want to be put to death. At the same time, I don't think that God wanted these images to be found. I think that it would have lessened or blunted what Jacob was about to say to Laban. Laban was basically coming after Jacob. He was accusing him. Jacob was innocent in this. But now that the images aren't found, Laban looks like he's a false accuser, which he is. If you really look at this passage, he is. And I think God wanted him to be hit with the full force of that. So he did not allow these images to be found. But again, it's just Laban's own behavior returning to him again. He's being deceived here. So verse 36, now Jacob speaks. And Jacob was wroth, that means he was angry, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong here? You didn't find these gods. Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. Remember, it was Jacob's deal that he made with Laban in the previous chapter and said, so shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come. When it shall come for my hire before thy face, every one that is speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. Jacob wanted to make it clear, when this deal is done and we go our separate ways, it's going to be clear that I didn't steal anything from you. And now he's saying, hey, you know what? If you found something that belongs to you among all my stuff, lay it out here. Let's look at it and judge. And that's exactly why Jacob had made that specific deal in the last chapter. So, verse 38. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. Not cast their young, I think that basically means miscarried. His flock was well treated. Okay? And the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which is torn of beasts I have brought, I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. What is he saying? He's saying, this is my manner, this is my behavior, this is how I've served you all these years, these 20 years. This is not the behavior of a thief. Why are you accusing me of stealing? You know what I'm like. You know I'm not a thief. This is not something that I would do. Verse 41. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. And now, just consider this too. Laban is not there by himself. He's there with all his brethren. And now Jacob is telling him like it is in front of everybody. This is what you did to me, Laban. You've changed my wages 10 times. You've treated me very unfairly. Verse 42, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou had sent me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked thee yesternight. So, a couple of things in this verse. First of all, he credits God for protecting him from Laban. Second, look at how he refers to God. He said, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me. He refers to, he's the God of Abraham. He's also the fear of Isaac, the fear of my father, Isaac. That's who God is. He's the God that my father fears. And he refers to him that way twice in this chapter. So again, I want to say that to you. I think at this point, Jacob is still learning to fear God. But he knows his father fears God. Right. And that's the steps that he's beginning to walk into here. But he's the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac. And eventually he'll come to be known as the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Okay? That's different from how Laban's going to refer to him. But also, at the end of this verse, he says, God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked thee yesternight. See, it's not like you were trying to pose this, Laban. It's not like you had said, God came to you and just kind of spared me from your wrath. That's not what he was saying. He was rebuking you. You were coming after me, and he said, take heed, you speak not to Jacob good or bad. What does that mean? It means leave him alone. Don't speak to him good and try and, oh, everything's fine, just come on back to me and keep serving me. And don't speak to him bad. Don't talk about all the bad that you're going to do to him because he's wrong. No, he's not. He rebuked you. Now that Laban's been exposed, What's his answer? Verse 43. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Notice how his whole, like, he was coming after Jacob and then saying, you know what, it's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. That's all of you. Now, he's been exposed, and he's trying to, like, twist these things around. He's, oh, wait a minute. No. They're my daughters. Now they're mine. As a matter of fact, everything that you have is mine. And he's constantly twisting things around to make the situation look like something different. Hey, I wasn't going to hurt you guys. They're all mine anyway. They're all mine. What can I do to them? I'm not going to hurt them. Of course not. Verse 44. Now therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. So he's trying to smooth things over. Why? Because he's been caught. He's been exposed. And he tries everything that he can to still justify himself in all this. But anyway, he says, let us make a covenant, I and thou, let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. So they gather these stones together, they put them in a big pile, a heap, and then they use it for a table, basically, and they eat on it. And that was supposed to be like a memorial of this, so that thing would remain in place, and it would be a witness that they had come together, they had eaten together in peace, and they had made this covenant. Verse 47, and Laban called it Jigar Se Hadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. I like Jacob's name better. It's a lot simpler. They actually, both names mean the same thing. They mean the heap of witness. Why are they different names? Because Laban's name that he gave it was Chaldean, and the name Jacob gave it was Hebrew. But it's the same meaning. Verse 48, and Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed. Verse 49, and Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. So that's what Mizpah means. It actually means a beacon or a watchtower. And it just refers to the Lord watching between me and thee. But look at the language that that Laban speaks here now. Verse 50, if thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. Well, wait a minute. Why does he bring this up? Why does he bring this up? If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, what is he doing? Is he's trying to twist this thing again and point the finger back at Jacob and say, well, you might do something bad to my daughters. He's twisting this whole thing around. He's the one that was caught doing all these bad things, being so dishonest. He's the one mistreating his daughters. We read about that earlier in the chapter. Everything bad is on him, and he keeps trying to twist this thing around with his words and make it seem like Jacob is part of the problem. Well, okay, maybe I did something that wasn't great, but Jacob too. I mean, Jacob, we're going to make this deal, and the Lord's going to watch and make sure you don't do anything bad to my daughter. What does that have to do with anything? Jacob hasn't done anything bad to them. Jacob has no intention of mistreating his wives. They're completely on his side. They know what their father's been doing in this whole situation. And Laban just trying to put them both kind of on equal footing. Like, well, let's just make a deal. Neither one of us is going to do anything bad. As if Jacob had anything in his heart toward Laban to do something bad to him. And then also to bring the daughters into it too. So, I mean, he's just constantly, every time he speaks, he's trying to twist this thing around and justify himself and make Jacob look worse than he is to put them more on equal footing. But what does Jacob do? Okay, verse 51, we'll just continue on reading. And Laban said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm." Again, that's the deal that Laban's making. The deal really only affects Laban. He's the one that wanted to come after Jacob and harm him. But he tries to bring Jacob into this too and said, "Oh, you're not going to pass over to do me harm either." Jacob had no intention of doing that. You just see how Laban is twisting everything? Verse 53. Again, this is still Laban speaking. "The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us." Notice how Laban refers to God. He's the God of Abraham and the God of Abraham's brother and the God of their father. Well, who's their father? Well, their father's Terah. Okay? Go to, I know we looked at this before. Go to Joshua 24. Joshua 24 and verse 2. It says, "And Joshua said unto all the people, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time, even Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor." That's who Laban is talking about. "And they served other gods." Okay? Now there's two possibilities here. One possibility is that Terah actually converted from the other gods to the true and living God. And I'd really love to believe that for his sake. Okay, we read that when God called Abram out of Ur of the Chaldees, who went? Well, actually, it was Terah that took him, we read. So, I don't know. Maybe it's a possibility that Terah also, hey, you know what? This is the true God. Let me follow too. And I'm going to go with you. Maybe he really was the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father. Maybe that's true. But I think it's more likely that Laban, you just follow his words all through this and the way he twists everything because he doesn't know God and he doesn't follow God. I think it's more likely that he's just kind of trying to generalize who God is and make a more of a traditional tribal type thing and say, "Oh yeah, yeah, your God, you know, the God of your family, you know, your ancestors, Nahor and Abraham and Terah, you know, he's their God." And I don't think he really knows who God is. But again, Jacob, what does he do? He swears by the fear of his father, Isaac. He's saying, "No, I know who God is. He's the God of Abraham and Isaac." And again, he's going to be known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Amen.
Okay? But anyway, Laban offers this covenant and this little pact between them that they're not going to pass over the heap to do harm. And Jacob says, "You know what? He's got no intention of doing Laban harm. He's not got no intention of mistreating his wives. And
He certainly doesn't want to take any other wives beside them. He's already got three more than he bargained for. So verse 54, then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. So Jacob takes the deal. It really doesn't make sense from his side, because it's not like he was going to do any of these bad things anyway. But he takes the deal because he just wants to move on. He'd rather just have the peace and take the deal and, you know what? Let's just accept your terms and just go our separate ways. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. And that is the last we read about Laban. He's mentioned a couple other times, just his name, but that's really the end of Laban's story. Good riddance. I mean, you see what his character's like in this chapter. Why does the Bible talk so much about Laban and what he's like and the kinds of things that he says? And you can see this pattern through the things that he says and the way that he deals with Jacob. The Bible talks about in the New Testament that one of the gifts of the Spirit is he gives discerning of spirits. And it's the Spirit of God that inspired the Scriptures. This is from his breath. These are the things of the Spirit of God. And I believe one of the reasons why he records these things in here is that it's to be a help to us so that we can learn to discern spirits. Laban wasn't the only dishonest man who ever lived. And at the same time, people didn't start acting like this in the 2020s or in the 1900s or in the 1800s. There have always been people like that. And you're probably going to meet some of them in your life. I know I have. But don't. Laban is a perfect example of somebody who says one thing and does another. He's a perfect example of someone who will give some lip service to God or acknowledge God in a general sense. But at the same time, he's got his own gods. And he's not interested in following and obeying the true God. So this is the story of Laban. And let's learn some wisdom from it. All right. That's it for Sunday school. Thank you for being here.